This podcast
is Entel Enhanced.
Hi, I'm Anchal, YouTuber, Instagrammer, and a real voice for the brown girls. Join me and some very special guests where we discuss taboo subjects and really give the aunties something to talk about. Thanks to Entel for supporting this podcast. Entel is an interactive podcasting app where you can interact with the things we're talking about. We think it's the best way to listen to our show, so please do check it out. Today, we're discussing how to be the Instagram girl versus the traditional brown girl. We're speaking about having immigrant parents while growing up in a Western society and the pressures to speak or understand our mother tongue and how balancing two cultures can make you struggle with your identity. In this episode, I'm joined by my lovely friend and the queen of modest fashion on the gram, Sabina. She's the ultimate boss babe while working that mum life with two boys. Again, another jam-packed episode with lots of laughs along the way, so grab a snack and enjoy. Hey, Sabina.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm good, I'm excited to do this. I can't believe we're doing it like this. It feels really weird.
I know. But we're making it happen the best way that we can, so that's good. So I think you're going to do a much better job than I am of introducing yourself. So please tell us, what do you do? Where are you from? What's your ethnic background? Let everyone know.
So I'm going to start with the fact that I'm a law graduate. I don't know why. I always like to throw that in. I was going down the legal path and then Instagram kind of happened. So on Instagram, I do fashion and beauty. And because I have two boys, they literally take up all my time. I do a little bit of mum life stuff as well. I am Pakistani. I always say third generation, but technically I'm the first generation to be born here. But my granddad came and worked here. My dad and mum came when they were very young. But yeah, first generation to be born here. And yeah, I don't really know what else to say.
No, that's great. I love that you threw in the law degree because I had no clue about that. Go you. Oh my God. I'm like, wow, you're like smashing it even more. Oh my God. Okay, so you were born in the UK, like myself. So when you were growing up, did you, correct me if I'm wrong, is your language, is it Urdu?
So I speak Potwari, which is like, it's not even a proper language. It's like a dialect. So it's a cross between Punjabi and Urdu. And there is literally like no written equivalent of it.
Okay.
And actually, it's only very recently that I've gotten comfortable with the fact that I speak it. Because growing up, I was always told by people around me, oh, it sounds nasty. Don't speak it. Learn Urdu because it sounds so much nicer. And it's only very
recently that I'm like, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it is softer. But at the end of the day, my mother tongue is my mother tongue, and this is my mother tongue. We are from a village in the middle of nowhere, and this is the dialect that we speak. And by kind of being like, okay, now I'm going to speak Urdu just to make other people happy or more comfortable, it's me not owning my roots. So it's only very recent that I've been like, you know what? Screw you. I can speak Urdu because I've learned it from Bollywood movies, which is actually Hindi, but don't even get me started.
It's kind of similar.
Yeah, it's very similar. But I can speak if I want to, but why should I? Just to make it easier for somebody else.
Wait, so who was telling you not to learn that language?
Everyone. There's this common misconception that because it's a dialect and there's no written equivalent, it doesn't sound as good, and you know, it makes us sound uneducated. And historically, you know, my ancestors were landowners, they were farmers. They weren't academically educated, but they knew so much about what they were doing. They didn't need academic qualifications the way you do in the West here. And I think growing up, it was always that sort of stigma of, oh, it's uneducated, or it's not, there's no written equivalent. And it's just something that I just went with because I heard it so much. And, you know, it's taken me 28 years to be like, well, actually, no.
Yeah, actually, that I do want to speak my language. And if it doesn't sound that fancy, then so what? Yeah. So when you were growing up, was it a must? Like, were your parents, did they kind of want you to learn your mother tongue first before English? Because a lot of people, you know, that have parents that are from other cultures, like even my parents, they kind of wanted us to learn Punjabi first, and then you know, we're going to learn English anyway because we're from here, we're going to go to school and we're going to speak it there. But what was it like for you? Was it like a must for you to know your language or any of the languages?
I don't think it was ever a must, but the reality was that that's what my gran spoke. That's what that's what my mum was more comfortable with. So naturally, I learnt it. And I mean, between us, I've got a lot of family, a lot of cousins. We all spoke English. The older ones would speak English to the younger ones, and you'd pick it up even before you started school. So actually, a couple of my siblings and a lot of my cousins aren't very good at speaking our mother tongue as a result of that. For me, I just naturally picked up too. And I think where you've had holidays, where I've had holidays in Pakistan as well. I mean, my mum took us for 6 months one time. I picked the language up when I was there. So that was an issue. I get a lot of pressure now. So I didn't really notice it. I think about a lot of pressure with the boys where everyone's like, speak your mother tongue with them because they'll pick up English when they go to school. So
do you feel like you need to speak your language to them?
What I do is I'll say the phrase in English and then repeat the same phrase in my mother tongue. And I think as a result, they've got no clue what's going on. So they're like, we're not going to speak either. No, he's nearly 2.5 and he's only just started talking. Because I think he's like, I don't know what she's saying to me half the time. But I think it's important, not just to like for your own identity, but I think being bilingual is a really good thing as well. You know, when I was at school and I was learning French, there were so many words in French that were very similar to my mother tongue, like chemise.
Oh, really?
Chemise is like shirt or something. God, it's been a long time since I spoke French. But chemise in my mother tongue is like the underdress that you wear if the top dress is like see-through or something. So it's just little things like that. They're like, I was like, oh, okay, linking it back. So it is helpful.
In our language, it's quite similar because we say chemise. And you say
chemise is the outer garment. Chemise is the under one.
Yeah. Oh my God, see, this is how bad I am at my own language. I don't even know what's inside, outside. Clearly, I didn't learn shit. When you were a kid as well, like, obviously you were picking up both languages and going to school. Were you ever in a situation where you didn't know what the English word for something was?
Oh my God.
Because for me, for the longest time, I didn't know what the word for coriander. I didn't know what coriander was. I just knew it in Punjabi, or even turmeric was just haldi. That's it. What the hell is turmeric? Did you ever have that?
It happened to me. It happened to me where one time somebody ruined something I was doing. I must have been in year two or year three, and I just didn't know how to say it in English. And I think that was the first time that I realized. I was like, don't know, because in my language it's harab, and I was like, even though I'm sure you don't add a D, I'm sure that's the English thing to do, but she's harabed it. But I was like, how do I say it in English? And it was I remember going home and being like, I didn't know how to explain myself. So, you know, as lovely as it is to have two languages, sometimes it does mean that you can't actually articulate how you're feeling.
So another word for me that I couldn't really explain was nazar. Like, how do you explain to your friends that you're going to get nazar? Like, someone can put nazar on you. Like, you need to be careful.
But the thing as a child, why did we have the concept of nazar? Why does a 7-year-old or an 8-year-old need to know what evil eye is? Of course you can't explain it to your school friends because they've got no idea what evil eye means. I think it's a very big thing in our culture.
And like, have you ever heard of the thing where you need to put like a dot of black eyeliner or something behind your ear and, you know, all these kind of little...
You know why that is?
Why?
The reason they put a black dot is like because it's a flaw. So like where you've got a complexion or something, they're like, if you put a flaw on it, then you won't get no, like, doesn't make sense.
The fact that we might be going to school with a black dot behind our ear or a black piece of string tied around our wrist, and then you have to explain to kids
my mother-in-law still does it. So like with my kids sometimes she's like, oh, they've got nazar, and she tries to break the nazar by sometimes she burns chilies and sometimes she does different things like that. My mum never did that, and I turn around to my husband and I'm like, imagine going to school and trying to explain to your kids that like, I got evil eye yesterday, so my mum burnt some... such a different world to, like, what we see in the West.
Yeah, we almost see that as normal, and then there's us. Like, even though we're normal too, but I kind of explain it in the same way, and I kind of say the same word, like, oh, yeah, but that's normal.
But I think that's why so many of us struggle with identity.
Yeah, it's true. And then you get older, and then you're like... all of a sudden you want to know about your kind of culture and identity way more.
But it's like, because you don't, these are the little things that I think people in the West don't know about us. You know, everybody loves a curry, but actually how much do you know about South Asian culture? And how much do we openly talk about it?
Yeah, we kind of don't as much, because I think there's a part of us that's slightly embarrassed by some of the things. I know for myself, and I know that that sounds awful, but yeah, some of this stuff does sound embarrassing.
No, but like today I'm rocking my Asian clothes, but I hated wearing them. And it's because for a very long time, and I understand it now, now that I'm older and I'm a mother, I know where my mum was coming from. But for a very long time, it's all my mum wanted me to wear. And having to go to school and everybody else is in like jeans or whatever, and you feel like you're the odd one out anyway, and then your mum sends you to school in Slovakia and you're like...
to school in Sarakami?
Yeah, and I hated it. I absolutely hate, like, on non-uniform day, obviously then uniform normally.
Yeah.
I hated it. I felt so embarrassed and I felt so out of place. And I understand from her point of view, she didn't want me to lose that love for my culture and didn't want me to lose my roots and But by doing it like that, I feel like she pushed me away from it, and it's taken me a very long time to kind of come full circle, understand it, accept it, and then embrace it.
That's actually, like, you're really making me think here, because even with me as a child, I feel like especially my dad, not so much my mum, but my dad was definitely very much, you're Indian, really trying to, you know, let me know. You have Indian friends, you know, you mix with more Indian people, you'll be more Indian, listen to Indian music. And I'm just like, I'm not into any of that. And you can't really force it. Do you know what I mean? Mm. But now, as a 28, 29 year old, now I'm like, I love being Indian, and then I know so much more, and I've kind of explored it myself. Mm. And it's way more interesting that way. But just going back to like you growing up as well. So your kind of friendship groups, were you like the only brown kid, or were you mixed with lots of different people?
I mean, primary school, you know what primary school is like. So I'll leave that. It's just loads of different people. And you're friends with someone one week. And then for a secondary school, year 7 to year 9, I had quite a diverse friendship group. But like, yeah, I was the only Pakistani one, and it did kind of, or there was two of us. And the other girl had a lot more, her mum was a lot more understanding of British culture. So a lot of times she was asked to do things that I weren't, and it made it like quite difficult and awkward for me to try and explain, well, okay, it's all right for you guys to go and hang around in town all day, but my mum wants to know where I am, and she's worried that somebody's going to see me and then, you know, talk shit about me. The aunties are going to, you know, what the aunties are going to say. It really does come back to that. So that was me from year 7 to year 9, and it was a bit of a struggle. And then just before my GCSE started, I got a friendship group, and most of us were South Asian. And actually, I think that was for the first time I felt like I could be a bit more comfortable and be a bit more myself, because they understood when I could and couldn't do certain things. But I went to an all-girls school, and actually I was friends with pretty much everyone. We were quite a tight-knit group of people. And I always said to the girls, ask me if you don't understand something, whether it's about my religion or my culture, I'm not gonna get offended, you know. And I did have quite a few people, you know, start saying Paki, and then I had to be like, well, actually I don't know. But other people might mind. You might want to rein it in when you're not around me. And so, you know, but that's how comfortable they were in being able to ask me things about my culture and my religion. And I think that really helped as well, because I think that's all it comes down to, is a lack of understanding, and then people don't want to offend when they do ask.
Yeah, it's so true. Like I used to be friends with a lot of black girls in school. I was the only brown girl. In fact, I was friends with everyone, but particularly I had a group of black girl friends, and they would say, you can say the N-word. And I'm like, no, I can't. Like, no, I can't. Because if I say it to you and then I say it somewhere, I'm going to
get somewhere else.
Listen, I'm not going to say it. I'm not even going to step into that territory. Let's just stay clear. But it was pretty much the same for me as well. I was kind of just able to tell them, like, just ask me. And they would say, what's this? And even if it was a jokey way and they're kind of taking the piss at the same time, I'd be like, whatever. This is their way of asking, you know, we're 15. Like, how serious is it going to get? But I just want to go back to your friend that was also Pakistani. What were the kind of things that you couldn't do and she could do?
So I think wearing English clothes, and I think when I went to secondary school, that was when I kind of put my foot down and I was like to my mum, well, I'm not going to wear Slovakian non-uniform days anymore.
You go, girl.
But where obviously I had been for however many years, you know, there's 11-year-old me and I'm like rocking up in an outfit that I think is, you know, pretty cool because it's like jeans and a top. And then, but it, she's obviously had the freedom to wear whatever she wants. So the jeans aren't good enough or the top isn't good enough. And it was little things like that, that I was like, damn, I wish like, you know, my mum had a better idea of like things here so that she could help me. And it's something that actually I still talk about now because like with a lot of the skincare brands that I've worked with, they always talk about this mother-daughter experience, you know, the first time you go on counter, you know, your mom takes you in. And I'm like, I never had that. It's been the other way around. I mean, it's been lovely for me. It's been really lovely. Yeah. My mum's first on-counter experience was with La Mer, so that was amazing. But I think that, you know, not being able to relate to that narrative either can be quite difficult. Whereas if you've got parents, so my relationship when I was a teenager was actually a lot better with my dad because I feel like I could, because he spoke English, he grew up here, although he grew up in a very different time. It, you know, racism that he dealt with like in the 80s was nothing compared to what, you know, how I lived my life in 2005. But being able to like go home and be like, okay, this situation arose or this happened, I felt more comfortable being able to speak to my dad about it because A, he could maybe relate a little bit, and B, I was saying it all in English. And sometimes it felt like there was a little bit of a struggle when I was trying to communicate with my mum. You know, she understands English. She's always a bit embarrassed to speak in front of us. But it, like the relationship I have with her now, it wasn't like that when I was a teenager. And I think the language thing was a big thing as well. And seeing in Western culture or in British culture what a mother-daughter relationship should be like. You know, you go shopping together, you go have lunch together, you have spa days together. That's not the culture that my mum grew up in. You know, it was I'm a housewife. I'm going to stay at home. And it's like, well, no, you can come out and do, you know, treat yourself and treat me as well. And it's been a learning curve to get her there. But, you know, she is there, thankfully, now.
It's quite difficult for them as well at the same time because they, like, you know, your first generation, you've been born here and they don't know what it's like for you, for their kids to go to school, mix with other types of children and then, you know, come home and compare themselves and say, actually, I want to wear jeans and a top, mum. I don't want to wear salwar kameez. So she's probably in her head had all these years of expecting, well, that's just what she's going to want to do because that's what I did and that's, you know, we are Pakistani and that's just how we're going to wear things. So it must be difficult for her or both parents to adapt even.
Well, I think it was just like a lack of understanding, really, because if you haven't gone through, and that was the difference with my mum and dad. My dad came over when he was like 7, so he went through the school system here, whereas my mum didn't. She came when she was 16. So not going through the school system, not understanding the pressure, the peer pressure.
Yeah, that's what it is.
That was a huge part of it. And I think, I mean, I always say to my sisters, I'm like, I was the guinea pig because I wasn't allowed to do anything.
The eldest? They
could, yeah, I'm the oldest. And they could do whatever the hell they like. And I'm like, how is that? But I wasn't allowed to do that when I was 17, but...
No, my eldest sister says the same thing. Literally, she's like, I live through you because I couldn't do any of this.
But it is a learning curve, isn't it, for the parents as well?
It is. Like, I couldn't even like go for sleepovers. I don't know if you were allowed, but I wasn't allowed to go for it.
My sisters are fine. They can do whatever they like. So I'm like, how's that?
Yeah, well, even to be fair, that was the rule that they kept through with all of us, except for my brother. But I think that's because he's a boy. But the rest of us, it was, how do you explain to your friends that I can't come for a sleepover? Honestly, it was so weird because you'd get excited and you'd plan it all in school and you'd be like, yeah, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. All right, I'm going to go home, I'm going to tell my parents, I'm going to ask them, and yeah, it's going to happen.
And you like work up the courage as well. You were like, you sit there and you think, how am I going to convince them? Like maybe if I say like this person's going and they know that person's parents, it might be okay. But again, you know, and do you know what that comes back to? That honestly comes back to, I don't know about you, but for me, it always came back to, what will other people say? If you're there and something happens or you go out or you do something, what will other people say? It wasn't, my parents said this so many times to me growing up. The phrase was, it's not that we don't trust you, we don't trust other people. But maybe they were lying, maybe they didn't trust me, but you know, that's the lie that they used on me. But you know, I think they were worried that what if they have a situation on their hands and then, you know, what are they going to say to people in the community? People are going to turn around and be like, well, why did you let your teenage daughter go and stay at somebody else's house?
Yeah, but you having two boys and now you're a mum, what would you say if they, and maybe if they were girls, would it be different? I don't know. Or would you treat?
Well, I think my husband and I have always said this right from the beginning. We're like, well, it's not going to be different whether it's a boy or a girl. And any restrictions we do place will be religious. Mm-hmm. You know, when they're old enough to make their own decisions, it's fine. But if Islamically it's allowed, then they can do it.
Yes.
You know, I'm not going to let that. It's not fair. It's not fair on them. And I think it's different because obviously me and my husband were both born here. We grew up here, so we have a much better understanding. But it's not fair to make them grow up in a culture and then not embrace that culture.
Yeah, because I think that's what we probably had difficulties with, where we're trying to embrace that culture, but we're kind of a bit torn because
you're not Indian or Pakistani and you're not British. You're a mixture of both.
Yeah.
And I was never encouraged to kind of embrace both and be happy with both and, you know, understand that having a balance of both is what was going to make me happy.
Yeah, exactly. Because I feel like our parents kind of, they're not telling you, you know, do British things. They're telling you, do things that are Pakistani. Or for me, it was like, do Indian things, be friends with Indian girls and this, that, the other. So you're only being plugged one thing. No one's telling you to embrace the other side. You kind of have to. You've got no choice. And it's nice to as well. But just for yourself, did you ever like fast for Ramadan when you were a child as well?
Ramadan moves back because the Islamic calendar 10 days shorter than the like Gregorian calendar. So Ramadan moves back 10 days every year. So actually when I was at school and I was younger, it was like in December or November and it was so easy. It was like 8 or 9 days. So it was
shorter
very different.
Days, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God. And what was that like, you know, explaining to your friends? Was that difficult
actually, I'm going to do an Instagram post on this because when I was at primary school, every time the teachers would ask, they'd be like, why? Like, I think they thought we were forced to fast and it was like some sort of child abuse or something.
What?
Yeah, I'm sure like they had proper concerns because they'd always ask you, why are you fasting? And back then, my response would be, well, oh, I do it to feel like, to understand what poor people feel like. And that's not it at all. There's so much more to it. But that was never really explained to me by my parents because I don't think they knew. It wasn't until I was like a lot older that their understanding of religion developed, and then obviously for me it's developed over time as well, but it's always like, you know, you always get the same questions and it kind of gets frustrating year on year. It's like when people are like, oh, you can't drink water, oh, you can't chew gum, oh, why don't, like the teachers literally would be like, why don't you eat something, no, like your parents aren't here. And it you know, I said,
I told you about 100 pounds a car.
But like, it's as a 10-year-old you'd be like, well, actually I'm not doing it for my parents, I'm doing it because I want to do it.
Yeah.
You know, 10 and under, you don't have to do it anyway. So a lot of the times we were doing it because we thought it was really cool.
That's actually so lovely that you were just trying to embrace it. And also, it's really, really hard to have that kind of self-control as a child, to still say no. I know if it was me and someone said, well, your parents are here, you can eat. I'd be like,
When I was 10 or 11, I was probably a lot better than when I was like 15 or 16. So... Yeah. Obviously, I went to an all-girls school, but when you're on your period, you don't have to fast. And literally, I'm pretty sure there were some of us that would be on our period the whole of Ramadan. Like, I'm pretty sure I saw her, you know, getting her school dinner like last week. She's still got me on her period. So,
she's just having a bad time.
You go through those phases. You know, there were so many times where I would break my fast at school, have lunch, do whatever, and then go home and pretend like I was still fasting.
Oh God.
You know, it's only when you grow up that like now I look back and I'm like, oh, I didn't really cheat anyone apart from myself, did I?
No, do you know what? I really respect you for openly saying that as well, because a lot of people wouldn't. So
I think everybody's done it. This is the other thing. I've had this conversation with my best friend where I'm like, I'm not gonna expose myself too much on this, I'm sure. But there's a lot of shit that we got up to when we were younger. And I'm like to her, we did it. Do you not think everybody else did it?
Right. Like,
but everybody just stayed quiet about it. And actually, if we all came out and spoke about it, it probably wouldn't be as taboo as it is. And then nobody would feel the need to do it because they'd be like, oh, actually, everybody else is doing it, so it's not that cool.
Yeah.
But it's this whole, oh, what will people say? What will people say?
You're kind of just trying to do what all the other kids are doing. Yeah, you're just trying to be somewhat, in inverted commas, normal. And that is not normal and that is not acceptable and not okay when it comes to traditional values and your culture. And so it's so hard. Like, you know, you're just trying to, maybe you don't want to fast, but you can't openly tell your parents, I don't want to fast. I'm going to go home and I have to pretend like I have been fasting and I'm hungry.
But it's something like, okay, so like on a Friday evening, just going into town. It's not like I was getting drunk or, you know, when you're 15, 16 years old, what are you going to do? You're going to sit outside McDonald's and think you're really, really cool. That's all I wanted to do. But, you know, there would be situations where I'd be like, okay, I'm going to so-and-so's house. Yeah. And like go to their house, ring home and be like, yeah, I'm here or whatever, and then go into town, because it was normally my mum just didn't understand that was just something that 15, 16 year olds did. And, you know, it wasn't like I was smoking or drinking or doing anything wrong.
You just want to hang out.
Yeah. But, you know, and they're like, what do you mean hang out? Like, are you going to sit there and do what? Yeah, it's not a good look. It's not a good look.
It's not a good look. But if someone sees you hanging out and who you're hanging out with.
Yeah, it's not a traditional thing for girls to do.
So obviously you go back to Pakistan quite a bit. Do you? I know you went back recently.
Yeah, so that's the first time I've been in a very long time. So I did when I was younger. I'm 28 and I've been 6 or 7 times in my entire life. Okay. But I hadn't been for a good 8 years, I think.
Wow.
So let me tell you. I've been kind of avoiding going because obviously when you go, you know, I'm not staying in a hotel, I'm staying with family. So it's like, it's not the same. And especially in the village, you can't go out to the, like, it's not a holiday in my eyes. Especially like, Dubai or Greece or, you know, somewhere like that or Pakistan. I'm like, okay. But I kept getting pressure from people being like, you haven't been. My husband's been like every year for the last few years. He loves it. Okay. I kept getting pressure. You haven't been. You haven't bought Noah. You haven't bought Yahya. You know, Noah's been to loads of places. Why hasn't he been to Pakistan? So I took him. My expectations, this is probably why I enjoyed it, because my expectations were so minimal. But I had such a good time.
Yeah, like that's good.
Being in the village, I got to switch off. And then being in the cities, they're pretty more like advanced than we are.
Yes. Oh my God, literally, I went to Delhi or something and I happened to walk past some clubs and me and my auntie, I was like, please, we need to go in. I was like, there's no queue. I was like, I need to see what the hell is going on in a club in Delhi. Yeah? I was like, full of brown people. What the hell? I've never seen this in my entire life. So I go in and it was just wild. I felt like I was in London and I was like, because I don't see brown people behaving in this way openly, I was like, no, I actually feel really uncomfortable. I need to go.
You know, you should all be hiding in the corners and doing this.
Yeah, literally. Normally, it's like everything is really seedy and no one's openly like kissing. And people were. I was like, what the hell? Even though it is just normal and they're just cracking on with their lives. And it's kind of something that I fight for. Like, yeah, do what you want to do. But then I was like, when I saw
it. Like, oh. Yeah, when it's in your face, you're like, wow, okay.
Yeah, I'm like, this isn't like a Bollywood movie. You know, when they're like pretending to kiss each other and everything. It wasn't
actually,
like that. It was full
have you seen a Bollywood movie recently? Because
they're full on.
Yeah, they're very full on. Sometimes I'm a bit like, okay, things are not appropriate. Like, obviously, me and my husband watch it, it's fine, but I'm like, if I was like watching this with my family, I would be cringing now.
Oh God, it's so. Yeah, that's the thing with Bollywood movies. You're meant to. They're like family films.
Yeah, traditionally,
know?
I always watch them with family, and like, even I mean, now it's like proper full on. But even like Gubby Who Should Gubby On, which came out ages ago, that song with Kajol and Shahrukh Khan, and like there's that really sexy scene and they both look amazing, but can you imagine being sat there with like my gran doesn't hold back, she says it how it is, you know, I love her, but then she's giving it her commentary and I'm just like sitting there like 13 years old absolutely cringing, and I'm like, it's supposed to be a family movie, why would you put that scene in there?
And it's always the longest scene as well, it's like, and slow-mo, I'm like, oh come on, speed it up. I just wanted to ask you, so what do you think you've gained from growing up in a Western society that you wouldn't have growing up in Pakistan?
The freedom and the opportunities. Let's do opportunities first, because I always, always say this. The life that I live right now, alhamdulillah, a million times over, I would never have had this if, like, my granddad didn't make the sacrifices that he did.
Yeah.
You know, and there's been many times in my life where I'm like, I can't be bothered, or I don't want to, or, you know, something comes along and I just don't have the energy or the passion, but I still take that opportunity with both hands, because I'm like, My mum and dad didn't get these opportunities. And like, no. My granddad left everything he loved, everything he knew to come here. He faced the racism that he faced, like working all hours God sends. Like, and when he first came here, they, you know, before my grand and my aunties and uncles all came, they were living like all of the men in crowded houses. Like, he went through a lot so that I could have this life that I really enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, and I would be silly not to take those opportunities and do the same for the next generation. So
yeah,
that's definitely one thing, opportunities. And then the freedom, like if I want to, obviously not right now in the middle of Corona, but yeah. Normally, you know, if I want to jump in my car, drive to the West End, do whatever I want to do, I can do that. I can't do that.
Yeah. It's so true. Like when I went back in December, and even though my cousins are like, they speak really, really good English now, and they actually speak much better English than I do. So like, so advanced, which is amazing. I just feel like we are still so different. I mean, you know, they've still got all the technology. They're sitting there with iPhones and MacBooks and, you know, all the kind of things that we have, but the lifestyle is just so different. It's crazy. And I almost, when I think about all the difficulties that we face, like balancing two cultures and, you know, oh, well, am I this? Am I that? We're still really, really lucky to even be here.
I don't think I would ever want to swap this life for anything else. You know, yeah. even though all of the, you know, when you're 15, 16 and you go through that self-identity crisis and you don't know who you are and which part of you is real, which part of you is fake, even with all of that thrown in, even if I had to do all of that again, I would. Because I just don't, like, this is what I mean. You're Indian or Pakistani or Bengali or you're South Asian and you're British. You're not more of one and less of the other. It is a blend of the both. And, you know, that's why you wouldn't be able to just live here and completely forget about your roots. And you wouldn't be able to go there and completely forget about this life.
Yeah, it's so true. It is so true. So I just want to go back to your job for a minute. Why did you start social media?
Literally, okay, it's the silliest thing. We were sat in a lecture and one of my friends was on Instagram and I'd never heard of it. And she was following Hackney's Finest. I don't know if you remember, back in the day with all the memes. And I was like, this is hilarious. So jumped on the bandwagon, made an Instagram account. And literally I was just posting pics at uni, geotagging them. And obviously my university campus was on Little Titchfield Street, which is right near Oxford Circus. So I think maybe that was the reason, because the geotags or whatever. Within about a month, I had 1,000 followers. And I was like, I don't even know 1,000 people. What is this? And that's when I kind of realized, okay, this is a thing. And then it took me 6 months to kind of, it took me a long time to kind of establish myself. You know, I get DMs from people and they're like, want to know the secret to overnight success. And I'm like, it's taken five years to build my brand. You know, it doesn't happen overnight.
No.
So 6 months in, the solicitor that I was working with at the time, brands had started sending me stuff and he's like, well, why don't you charge them? And I was like, Nick, don't be silly. Nobody's going to kind of pay me and send me free stuff.
I'll just take the free stuff. Like, no one's going to actually pay me.
Yeah, little did I know. And then I think it was like a good 3 years after doing Instagram that I got my first big campaign, which was with Estee Lauder. And after that, it's kind of just, got the ball rolling.
Amazing. And how long have you actually been doing it for? Because I know you do YouTube as well as Instagram.
So I've been doing it, I keep saying 5 years, but I think it's longer than that. I think it's 6 years now. But
just add one or 2 years on.
It makes me feel so old though.
I know. I feel the same.
Especially when I go on the Explore page and I see all of these like new bloggers and they're like, 16, 17. And I'm like, wow, I feel really old.
I know. And then I think, oh my God, good on you for knowing, like having this skill,
it's a completely different world than growing up in.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't have social media sites. Well, I had Bebo.
Yeah.
You know, do you remember Bebo?
But
that wasn't anything like Instagram.
So, Bebo, you know, high five.
MSN Messenger.
Yeah, I know. It was good. But did you intend on it being as successful as it is?
No. And honestly, sometimes after, like, this is the other thing people don't understand. They're like, you take a picture and you get paid. And I'm like, don't even try me.
Yeah, don't you dare.
My ass off. Like, my son was 3 weeks old and I was on mat leave from my day job, and I said to myself, Sabina, you've got 9 months until you go back into the office. You need to make those 9 months count so that at the end of your mat leave, you can say, I'm not coming back, and you can work for yourself. And he was 3 weeks old when I started leaving him, and I grafted my ass. My body hadn't even healed. And this is what people don't understand. They think, oh, yeah, you've got it easy. And I'm like, you don't see the tears, the stress, the pressure that goes on behind the scenes.
Literally, I was like,
But it is. And this is what people don't see. You know, when you when you upload a 1 minute IGTV video and you're like, well, actually, that was about 5 hours of work whilst I was trying to feed my babies and doing things, you know, in between. People just don't see all of that. So
what you do and what I do, it's not the most traditional job. We've taken more of the creative route. So what was the reception from your family like when you decided that you're going to go full time, you're going to do this? And especially where you had a day job already, probably something a bit more secure, shall we say? What was that like?
Actually, my parents are like amazing, and I wouldn't be where I am without them, because every time I have a breakdown, I ring them up and they're the ones that are like, talk me through it, counsel me through it. So you know, and the reason that it was my dad who always pushed me to study law and kind of take that solicitor route. And it wasn't because he wanted me to become a solicitor. It's because he wanted me to have a job that made good money so that I had an easy life. And in their head, it's doctor or solicitor. That, you know, that's an easy life. It's
doctor,
not.
Solicitor, it was, engineer, all of these.
It,
you
was
know,
never it, for the, it was never for the title. It was always, I just want you to, you know, have it easy.
You'll make
for
money.
Yourself.
Yeah.
And the other thing he always said, and he was saying it to my sister the other day, is you've got to work for yourself. You've got to work for yourself. You don't want to put those hours in and be making money for anybody else. So I always had that at the back of my head. And I always thought, I'm going to have my own law firm or something like that.
Wow.
And obviously, I was doing this kind of, it'd been like three and a bit years before I went on mat leave. So actually, they'd seen I was making a little bit of money off it. My mum, bless her, it was so funny. She used to do my pictures. And it was always, honestly, it was always like, hurry up, what if somebody sees us? You know, so I was like, the mum, when I put them on the internet, everybody's going to see them. She'd be like, yeah, but that's different because they don't see me taking them for you.
Oh my God.
Yeah, bless them. So like they, even though deep down they weren't really sure, they didn't really agree, they always supported me. And I think when I went full time, they were like, you just got to make it work for yourself now. And, you know, even now, like my mum literally, you know, the only reason I was able to grow up the way I was is because she was the one that took care of my son. And, you know, and I had that. Yeah. That
support.
Security of knowing that she's that he's with someone that I could trust 100%, which meant that when I was going off and doing work things, I could really focus on them and not be thinking about him or worrying about him.
That's so lovely. But you know, obviously you get comments all the time where, oh, it's just, you're just taking a picture and that's it, it's so easy what you do, or how do you make money? Did you ever have like any extended family members, like your aunties or cousins even, kind of maybe side-eyeing what you do, or was everyone really positive, really on board? Like, what was that like? Because I know it's actually, it's not the easiest thing, putting yourself out there. You put yourself out there on the internet. For me, I did that, but I wasn't thinking about all the other people until all the other people turn up.
I'm really lucky in that my aunties and my cousins are like 100% supportive. And like like every time I messed up as a teenager, it'd be them that I go crying to, be like, oh my God, like, you know, this is going to ruin my life. You need to fix it for me, you know. So they've always had my back. And even with this, you know, from day one, they've had my, I mean, they think it's funny. They think it's bloody hilarious when people like are like, oh, you're Sabina's cousin or you're Sabina's auntie. They just, because they know, like, they've known me my whole life. They know exactly what I'm like and they know what a nightmare I can be. So they're a bit like, God, like, you know, they think it's really
hilarious. You got fans, like, what the hell.
I did have a few people on after I got married on my husband's side that didn't really understand it. I think a lot of them still don't. And I had a lot of people say stuff to my mother-in-law, and bless her, she never said anything to me, you know, but something would happen. One thing she said to me was that she goes, when she first came to this country, she wanted to learn how to drive a car, and none of the women drove cars. And she said the amount of people that made comments about her driving a car or learning to drive, she goes, it's funny because now everybody drives a car and it's normal. And she goes, they're all making comments about you now. In 20 years' time, all of their daughters will be doing the same thing.
Amen. Yes, mama.
So, you know, she had my back as well, but I know a lot of people were
Stirring the pot. And especially since you're kind of new, somewhat new in their family, someone's always going to want to pick out something, you know. So do you think that if you weren't successful in your social media job with what you're doing, do you think they would have been a little less accepting, or would they have said, like, go back to law, you know, have that security? Or would they have kind of just said, no, just keep going? What would it have been like?
I don't know, because they see the amount of stress that I'm under sometimes.
Yeah.
It does. Like, I know people think all you do is make videos, but there's a lot of the business side of it does get very heavy sometimes. And even just putting your life on the internet, and, you know, everybody thinks
it's stressful. I'm literally in tears all the time.
But everybody thinks they can have a dig at you. And to be honest, I've developed very thick skin, and that doesn't get to me. But there is a lot of other things that go hand in hand with that. But if it didn't work out, I don't know what they would have said. I mean, even now my dad keeps saying to me, he's like, you need a side hustle. And I'm like, my side hustle.
Yeah, exactly. No, I don't actually have time for a side hustle. My dad, he actually, whenever I am in tears, which is quite often, whenever I'm like having a hard moment, or, you know, I've been slogging away at something and it's just not gone as well as I've wanted it to, so many times I've been like, do you think that you should do something else now? Even though he knows how much I love what I do, and I will take the tears any day because I just love it. So it's fine. I'm just crying right now. Put up with me crying, but I'm going to be fine tomorrow. But yeah, it's exactly the same for me. Like my dad will be like, I think maybe you need to work on something else now.
But it's not that he's saying don't do it. He's just like, you need to make the most of this opportunity. And I'm like, Dad, how many opportunities can I make the most of, you know? Like,
I just want security for you.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. They just want you to be, like, they want the best for you. I think that's all it is. They've had it hard. You know, I think this is what we forget. But, like, we were having a conversation once, and when I said to my dad, I genuinely don't know. I can't, like, think of an example of, like severe racism that I faced. And he was like, that just amazes me. He's like, growing up the way I did, the number of times that I was beaten up, he's like, I can't believe how different things are for you.
Well, yeah, we're really lucky to live in this time. And also, it's just crazy how I've got a lot of respect because they kind of just pick up their lives. And my dad, he came to this country with nothing. That's the story of every dad, isn't it? I came to the country with no money, five pennies in my pocket.
But that's why I feel so guilty when I cry, and I'm like, oh my god, my life is so hard. And it's just like, well, actually, they really know what a struggle is.
Have you ever faced any kind of struggles of doing your job while balancing your culture? For example, anything in your comments has like, let's say, for example, if you've got Pakistani followers from Pakistan, do you ever find that there's any sort of judgment with the way that you do things?
Honestly, there's keywords that I've blocked.
Oh, really?
I'm always like, I don't get hate, but it's because I've blocked so many words. I don't have the time for it, Anshul. Honestly, I don't have the time for it.
But there are people that are just judging you.
Judging me or judging things that I do. And I feel like when you, like, the image that, this is why I do stories on YouTube as well. The image that you kind of get through my Instagram is, oh, everything looks perfect and very nice and nice. And actually, I can thank you. But I am quite feisty. Like, I'm very opinionated and as nice as I like to be because it's my brand, you know, I can get the claws out if I need to. And I think that's what I kind of show on stories, but people don't always see that on the feed. So what I found was at the beginning was I'd kind of get into spats with people.
Mm.
And someone would say something and I'd be like, hell no. And actually, A, it's not worth it. B, I don't have the time. I don't want to damage my brand. It's so much easier just to block those keywords and, like, just, I don't need it.
Let it go.
The headache. Yeah.
Let it go. And do you find that, like, even in terms of going to events or trips or things like that, do you ever find it's difficult to balance your culture and balance your job? I personally, like, I drink. I know you don't drink. I drink, but I don't always drink, and I don't want to drink. And actually, this whole year I haven't drank because I don't want to. Yeah, girl. And I can enjoy myself without it. And I sometimes feel the pressure when I'm at events or just, you know,
It was very difficult to begin with. You know, like, I had quite a big following, and I'd rock up to events, and no one knew who the hell I was because. I never work with a mainstream brand, you know.
Yeah.
I'd walk into an event and I wouldn't know who half the people were because I'd been in this little corner of the internet with all like the Muslim hijabi bloggers.
Right.
And like, you know, someone would cut, you know, and I'd be having a conversation and they'd mention someone who like maybe had a million followers and I'd be like, oh no, I don't know who that is. And it wasn't me being a bitch or being rude, but it's genuinely because I was in my little corner of the internet. So it's taken time. I'm a lot more like, you know, I see you regularly. There's people that I see all the time. And you develop relationships and you develop friendships and it's got a lot easier. But at the beginning, I was so, I never let it show, but I was so self-conscious. And, it, you know, when you've got a scarf as well, I feel like the scarf speaks before you do. And I was always a bit like, are they making a judgment or are they thinking something before they've even spoken to me? So it was hard at the beginning, just for me and my self-esteem, my self-confidence. But I think as I've got to know people and as I've developed relationships and, you know, I follow people online that now follow me back. And when I see them, I can ask questions and it's gotten a lot better. But it was difficult to begin with.
Yeah, I feel exactly the same. Like sometimes I feel like, oh, I don't know. You know, when you're like the only brown person in the room, I personally notice it, even though it's not even that big of a deal and everyone's being normal. But it's just in my own head, I'm like, oh my God, I'm the only brown person. Am I being weird? Am I being different? Have I said something stupid? Have I said the word holdy? Like, what the hell? Am I speaking the right language? What the hell? I don't know. I just get so paranoid about it.
I think it's completely normal. And even with me to begin with, there was many times where if I was the only brown girl, at the back of my head, I'd be like, am I just a tick box for diversity?
Right.
You know, especially like when you're on the corner of the table or you're right on the end, you're like, are they being genuine? Do they just want to seem like they're diverse? Like, it's taken me a long time to know which brands are worth my time, who is being real, who's being authentic. Yeah, it's been a mindful, this industry.
Yes, I feel the same. Sometimes I think maybe we're overthinking it and maybe it's not like that. But I feel
I think at the beginning, maybe I did overthink it. Like I said, I'm a lot more comfortable now. And I think it's been a lot easier for me in this industry than it was in the legal sector. Let's just say that.
Oh, wow. That's good. I guess you're doing the right thing then. Okay, so I have two last questions for you. First one. What message would you send for any brown girls that are feeling the pressures while trying to start a career that's less accepted, in inverted commas, maybe something more creative?
I think life is about taking risks. Mm-hmm. I think we all worry that things won't work out. And it's like, so what? Whether that's a career, whether that's a relationship, whether that's money you're investing in something, so what if it doesn't work out? You can always start again. When we let go of that biggest fear of it not work, because the reason we worry that it's not going to work out is what are people going to say if it doesn't work out?
Yeah, literally. Especially when you go down a route that isn't the traditional route. Everyone is expecting to see you fail anyway. So
when it does, when it does, you're worried that when it does fail, you're just confirming what everybody else was saying.
Right.
And then, you know, that's what puts you off. But actually, if you're passionate, if you love it, it doesn't even matter if it doesn't work out. As long as it's making you happy, that's the main thing.
Yeah.
If you enjoy that, go for it.
Yes, girl. Okay. And then my last question is, what message would you say to the talking aunties or family members that are putting pressure on brown kids that are just trying to live their best lives?
I would say they probably don't even realize they're doing it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the times when, if you're not working and maybe your kids are grown up or they're at school and you don't really have anything to do with your day, you might just, you know, preoccupy it with gossip. And, you know, it might, in your eyes, it might be harmless. Oh, did you hear what so-and-so started? Or did you hear who so-and-so is engaged to? It might just be, in your mind, a harmless comment, but actually you don't know the damage that it's doing, not to that one person, but to our community. And the damage has been done to our generation, but it's the next generation that we need to take care of. And just, you know, find something to do. Everybody
has something to do.
You know, watch some YouTube videos, some cooking tutorials or something.
Yeah, you know, find a new skill.
Find a new hobby.
Just stop talking. Yeah.
About other people. You can still talk. We're not going to restrict you. You know, nobody's allowed out of the house. We're not going to say you stop talking now as well. But just, you know, don't talk about other people.
Mind your business, basically. Yeah,
mind your own business. That's all it comes down to. And actually, off the back of that, to parents, stop giving a shit what other people say. The people that are talking the loudest, their kids are the worst.
Yeah, it's so true. Oh,
you know, but none of us want to be a grass. None of us want to say, oh, yeah, so-and-so's daughter's doing this.
Right. Snitches get stitches.
Yeah.
But sometimes I want to tell that auntie, I'm like, babe, you need to focus what's going on in your own damn house before you start talking about someone else's, okay?
I've been in that situation where I'm like, you know, like, I want to tell you what your daughter's doing, but it's so embarrassing I didn't even say it to you. So I'm just going to let you sit here and talk crap about me.
It's so true. So many times I'm like, whatever, say what you want, because whatever. I know the truth. And that's
But this is why it's so amazing that you're doing this, because, like, we all know it happens. Like, let's start stamping it out.
Yeah, this is what I mean. I just want to kind of just let everyone speak about it openly. Because it doesn't really get spoken about. So yeah, if any aunties, gossiping aunties are listening, then I hope you heard Sabina's message, because it was loud and clear. But have you got anything exciting coming up over the next few months? I know we're in quarantine, but anything exciting coming up, anything you're working on?
Work-wise, I've actually really enjoyed being in quarantine. Like working on content. Content's my favorite thing to do. And I think when you're swanning up here, there and everywhere, you don't have time to do that. So it's been nice.
So true.
But that's it. Nothing else in the pipeline.
Amazing. Oh my God. It's been so lovely having you on here. Can you tell everyone where they can find you, what your social media
apps are? All my handles everywhere, on my website, my YouTube, my Instagram, everything is just my name, which is Sebina. And then there's an extra A in social media. Sebinah, Sabina. That's it.
So guys, that is it for this week's episode. I had so much fun recording that with Sabina. It was so lovely chatting away to her and actually finding out things I just didn't know. I really hope you guys could relate to a lot of the things that, you know, we were saying or we've gone through. Just once again, I want to thank Sabina for joining me on this week's podcast. Please, guys, don't forget to follow us on our Instagram page, What Would the Aunties Say? And leave a comment on the picture of Sabina's episode. What would your auntie say to this episode? What do you think they're going to be saying about some of the things that we were talking about? Do let us know on the Instagram. Finally, please make sure you subscribe so you don't miss out on any upcoming episodes. And feel free to leave a review. It will really help us out. Thank you so much. And I'll catch you guys in my next episode. Bye. Firstly, I want to say a huge thank you to Sabina for joining me today. I absolutely loved chatting to her. This conversation was just so real, and it was just so nice to hear that we share so many similar experiences growing up with immigrant parents and in general trying to balance two cultures. I just want to point out that I know sometimes it may seem difficult or challenging, but it's honestly such a blessing that we get to embrace two completely different versions of ourselves and merge them into one. Please do let me know what your thoughts or even personal experiences are around this topic on the What Would the Auntie Say Instagram page. And it would also be amazing if you could subscribe to my podcast, rate and review. If you would like to see links to anything I'm talking about, then don't forget to download the Entel app. Once again, thank you so much, Sabina, and thank you guys for listening. I'll see you on the next one.